like a punch in the face or a surprise explosion. It's Busted Pencils fully led at education talk, educated educators talking education, teachers teaching teachers about teaching, you name it, all kinds of things, or the new one out there that I hear is getting a lot of attention, but Busted Pencils, Democracy's Digital Asset, Johnny Lupinacci, debuted on the John and Gordy Show.
Hey, nice. You
know,
love that show.
Yeah, I know, out there. So, you know, we are Democracy's Digital Asset. And I was like, okay, we can roll with that. I like that. I can kind of mess around a lot and have a, you know, because we said, you know, guess what? It's public education, whether it's public K-12, public higher education, education, the bedrock, the foundation of American democracy. And so considering that, then it makes total sense to be talking about Busted Pencils as democracy's digital asset. What makes it digital, Johnny? Well, guess what? Podcasting. You can get us as a podcast. You can get us on the radio show. You name it. You can get, you know, Jacob, thinking about that, right? I mean, digital asset. What do you think of when you hear that?
Well, the first thing I think of when I hear the words digital asset is, well, frankly, Busted Pencils, Tim. It comes right at me.
Johnny's
better. Better than Bitcoin. Here we are. Democracy's digital asset, Busted Pencils.
I love that. Better than Bitcoin.
No, that's what I think of. You know, anytime, I'm an old guy. Anytime I hear about digital something, it always makes me think of like, it's an AI conversation right now. It's some kind of, but really, Tim, it is, you know, the way. It is the future. It is currently, how we get together and, you know, talk shop, talk about education, talk about all things related to education. And as you said, education, and you said of American democracy, most certainly of American democracy, but I would even add of all democracies, all types, even back to the Greeks, right? Education being a bedrock, right? A learned society, your civic duty being built on some common understanding, whether that's literacy or all of the many things that constitute our great curriculum right now or that are debated about all the way to the federal level currently. Not always happy about the discussion happening nationally about, you know, curriculum and things, but nonetheless, education is part of democratic citizenship, investing in public education. That's not just your dollars. All right, our tax dollars do that, but it's also our interest, our time, our brain energy, right? Time spent thinking about, time spent talking about, time spent volunteering for, or putting our hands to work in education. These are all important ways of expressing your civic duty in a democracy. And as I've said many times before, you know, we find ourselves in a precarious moment as a democracy. And so these conversations, these discussions, these podcasts, these digital assets, right, are all part of that civic duty, democracy in action here at Busted Pencils. Thanks, listeners, for joining us on this fine Saturday broadcast. Tim and Jacob, how are you both doing after, you know, Thanksgiving, good good Black Friday shopping? I know you guys were both out in line early yesterday. But give us a rundown. How was your holiday?
Well, you know, Johnny, on Black Friday, I almost had one of those TVs I was looking at right now. And, was it like 900 inches, I think it's, and you can get that TV now for like, you know, like $200 or something. The problem was I need a whole new wall in my house to hold the damn thing up. And I don't have the money for home remodeling to take the size of these new big screen TVs. So now I joke, Johnny, I'm being sarcastic. There's not a 900-inch TV yet. that I have, you know. Jacob, you look amazed by that.
Yes, Tim, I'm deeply amazed that you do not yet have a 900-inch TV. This is America, Tim. All right, we're all out here. We're working for the weekend so that we have enough money to risk our lives in a very tense trip to Walmart. And I think if that's not America, then I don't know what is.
Nice. Well, you know what they say? They say go big or go home. Well, Tim, it's after Black Friday. It's go big at home.
Go big,
right? With your 900-inch television. No, I mean, it's just, you know, most people out there listening, we didn't have school Thursday or Friday. Some districts probably had Wednesday off. So it's a holiday week. Hopefully you found things to be grateful for. You got to spend time around friends, family, loved ones. That's always a joy. You know, the old social studies teacher in me, Tim, like take a walk back down memory lane. Like there was different ways we learned about Thanksgiving and then that we learned to teach about Thanksgiving. Tim, what was one of your favorite things as a teacher or that you worked with teachers more recently? Because Tim and I both teach teachers in our recent histories. I still do it. Tim is now one of our administrative leaders in higher education. But Tim, you can remember both being a teacher and teaching teachers. Thanksgiving, one of the important holidays to learn to teach about. What's one of your favorite, you know, classroom stories about the holiday?
Classroom story or fun teaching? For me, it was, I actually had an idea because I was really, you know, early on in my teaching career, 90, 91, 92, you know, Thanksgiving was still, and remember, I was an elementary teacher. So, you know, I taught second grade, taught fifth grade. And in elementary schools, actually, Thanksgiving is one of the few times, believe it or not, and most people could remember this, that actual some form of what we tried to call history would actually permeate the entire school. And that's Thanksgiving, right? The Thanksgiving story, the pilgrims landing at Plymouth Rock. It was a big rock. It cracked their ship open. They came out of the ship. They were wearing really big gold belt buckles on their shoes and their belts. And their hats. Yeah. And when they got out too, there were these, you know, very friendly Indians at the time who were there waiting and greeting them as they came off the Mayflower, and really showed them how to survive in the new world. And on that first Thursday of their trip, they had their first Thanksgiving dinner around probably a 900-inch picnic table. And there was turkey and cranberry sauce, and the Native Americans, the Indians, and the pilgrims were all hanging out. And I was just like, coming as a social studies educator with the background, I was like, I think I need to blow up this story. and so for me, I'd spent a lot of time actually trying to bring some sense of historical accuracy to the mythology of the Thanksgiving, what do you want to say, fantasy that actually elementary schools probably historically had done the most kind of, you would say, historically inaccurate damage. And actually, I really liked having Thanksgiving come around. And then when I was a teacher of teachers, teaching future elementary school teachers, man, we got into it about like, so what are you guys going to teach when you get out there and you see somebody putting a teepee and a totem pole up next to a Thanksgiving table? You know, so I got to say, that's my favorite part of the teaching realm around Thanksgiving, Johnny and Jacob.
Yeah, I love it, Tim. Yeah. I love it. That's the cue, Jacob. Go.
There was no talk about Squanto in that entire story. You did not name drop the Wampanoag Indians, Native Americans. I'm just offended, Tim. Where is my Thanksgiving stuff that I remember from my boyhood? You can't give me facts and information. I want my comforting American myths.
Yeah, you know, I mean, think about it. The first canned cranberry sauce was in 1619. Who knew?
They cracked it open on Plymouth Rock to get that can open. That, I mean, next you're going to tell me Lucy didn't really pull the football away from Charlie Brown.
Didn't pull the football. But you know what? One of my favorite lessons that I taught the future teachers was that we did a research project actually around the idea if there would have been a quote Thanksgiving celebration, what food would have been there in Plymouth, Massachusetts in November at that time? And that was actually a really cool, interesting lesson because, you know, yeah, potentially turkeys and stuff like that, but, you know, it was more of a hunter-gatherer assortment of what was available. And the big thing, lots of seafood. Lots of seafood.
Really?
Well, because think about where they were, right? The idea that Thanksgiving is essentially seafoodless makes no historical sense.
That shocked me to hear from you, Tim, but now that you mention it, I mean, it does make a lot of sense. Where's the clam chowder? Where's all your wonderful New England coastal food? It really, you would think that would be part of it.
Yeah, you know, so there it was. And then, again, you know, what were the native food sources available? Not Native American food sources, but native food sources. And so that's kind of how you have to put together of what might they have eaten at that first Thanksgiving. And what a great opportunity to give students there, that for me, those were future teachers, but for them then also to go back into their classrooms and kind of say, okay, hey, we're going to celebrate Thanksgiving in this classroom, but kids, let's do a research project on what do you think the pilgrims really ate at Thanksgiving. So there's my memories, Johnny Lupinacci.
Hey, I love it, Tim. I love how you both talked about, even in joking, you know, it's real. I like that you talked about good teaching includes multiple perspectives, right? And so, you know, teaching to hold space both for, you know, a holiday, a national holiday where we express thanks and gratitude with also, you know, a tinge of, hey, there's something that we should teach here about colonialism and, you know, the perspective of Native people, and also hold space for it to be a day of mourning as well, right? Like there were great struggles and great effects that, colonialism brought that weren't so celebratory, but to hold space both for being grateful and thankful and for honoring a day of mourning. You know, I think those are important. Teaching with multiple perspectives. Stay right here with us and tune back in because we're coming right back at you with more, you know, Thanksgiving talk. And we'll probably talk about this country's future, the U.S. Department of Education, when we come back.
Out the theme music as, you know, the Mayflower was pulling into Plymouth Rock. You could hear that in the back. Just thinking, man, yeah. Happy Saturday. And got to put out there, too, this is Small Business Saturday, Johnny, because Black Friday, you know, but Small Business Saturday. And actually, you know, I got to say, I hate the commercialism that Thanksgiving in that sense has been turned into in Christmas. But if there is something truly important, then, you know, supporting local small businesses out there. Take the time right now, Saturday, if you're out, especially if you're out driving right now, listening to the show. Hey, you see a local coffee shop right there? I guarantee you that's going to be some good coffee. Pull over, Small Business Saturday, grab something, talk about, hey, you know what? I was listening to Busted Pencils on whatever station you are. If you're in Hayward, you know, if you're in Madison, just let them know that Busted Pencils Civic Media said, I should stop in and support my local business on Local Business Saturday. So love that. And hey, I forgot one thing before we get into it, though. Another historical activity I did with my students on Thanksgiving, research the first proclamation of Thanksgiving.
Oh, I got a question about that, Tim.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that history of Thanksgiving, because I kind of understand it in two different stories. And I'm always wondering, like, I knew it became a national holiday at some point much later.
Oh, much later.
But are you like, give us the background, give us a little history lesson, well, Tim, on Thanksgiving.
Know, I mean, so you got to look at for the first proclamation of Thanksgiving. Yeah. The national holiday, No, man, we're talking many years, but it's around the 1630s in the what we call the New England colonies. And there's a proclamation out there. You can find this primary source document. And yeah, you know, it's an interesting because the first few lines proclaim thanks for the dismantling, dismembering, and the displacing of those Native Americans that were not real cool at helping the Pilgrims, the Puritans, and all those people. So I always thought that that was a kind of an interesting juxtaposition, was to take a look at that primary source document proclamation. And again, I'm trying to remember it, but I'm pretty sure it was in the 1630s. Again, thinking about, you know, about 20, almost 20 years after 1619 in Plymouth. But the first recorded documentation in the, what we call the New World, was thanks for getting rid of Native Americans. And so that's an interesting document to put up next to the classic image that typically hangs in elementary school classrooms, again, of that festive community gathering of pilgrims with their hats and Native Americans with their headdresses all celebrating each other around a big picnic table. So.
And then becoming a national holiday.
Okay. Like, and then
put this in the chat. Like, when did it become the Thanksgiving we know about, Tim?
Well, so the national holiday. So Abe Lincoln has, yes, a part to do with it. George Washington actually issues a Thanksgiving proclamation too in the 1700s that doesn't take on any national validity.
Doesn't gain any traction.
Abe Lincoln in the Civil War gets lots of letters from one of the, I can't remember the woman's name, to set up a national day of Thanksgiving. But yeah. Really, though, national holiday 1941. And to make things even more interesting, why is it on the Thursday that we now celebrate it? Largely, it is now on the Thursday, the third or what, however you get it, at the insistence of, and this is why we get Black Friday, largely at the insistence of most retailers to give it more time between Thanksgiving and Christmas for people to go shopping. And so it's location on the calendar. I thought we
saved the Howard Zinn for the end of the show. All right. Now you're giving me the history of America sucks. Come on. What are we talking about here?
Well, and then that was under FDR, right? Jacob put that in the chat earlier, you know, becomes a national holiday.
Yeah.
Under FDR, 1941. And I think they were probably thinking, hey, let's make this a Thursday, right? The fourth Thursday of November. And there probably was some economic interest in that as well. Help grow that the wonderful spirit of Christmas being, you know, being overrun by consumerism.
And the black was too, so that they could actually, the businesses could, quote, put their spreadsheets in the black.
Move from the red to the black.
That's your Black Friday.
Yeah, Tim. And I think you were talking about letter writing and campaign to Lincoln. You know, the Smithsonian. I looked it up while we were kind of chatting about things. Sarah Hale. You were right. Sarah Hale's 36-year campaign finally took some traction with Abraham Lincoln to consider Thanksgiving a holiday, you know, and the President Abraham Lincoln issued that proclamation later to be put into, you know, the format we know it now by FDR. These are great things, Tim, on our post-Thanksgiving Saturday broadcast. Pencil busters, if you're like, come on, get to the content. I teased it last break. U.S. Department of Education. I don't know, folks. Are we thankful? Are we grateful? I don't. I'm not too thankful for Linda McMahon's most recent stuff. We'll talk about it when we come back.
Welcome back. I'm Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking Thanksgiving history. If you didn't know, well, now you do. And there's a whole lot of didn't you know in the whole first half of the show. So thank you, Johnny. Thank you, Jacob. And hey, if you want to fact check us, send us a note. And, you know, you want to dispute the history of Thanksgiving according to Busted Pencils? Love to hear from you. Sure. We'll bring you on the show and talk a little bit about that because, you know what? Discourse, civil discourse, one of the foundational attributes of living in a democracy. So we want to practice that. But, Johnny, man, we've been teasing it. The story, the Department of Education, the DOE down there in D.C., you know, since Ronald Reagan, it has been attempted to be dismantled. And it looks like President Trump finally found the right person to take it apart. And, you know, kind of makes sense given the background of Linda McMahon, you know, top ropes, elbows to the head, breaking chairs across people's backs, herself even regaining consciousness after being dropped in a pile driver. Yeah, she is the dismantler in chief because the Department of Education, man, they're making good on it, Johnny, because as of this week now, the office, and these are offices that were in and part of the Department of Education, elementary and secondary education, moving to the Department of Labor, the Office of Post-Secondary Education's institution-based grants to the Labor Department, Indian education programs to the U.S. Department of Interior, on-campus child care support for parents enrolled in college to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, foreign medical accreditation, HHS, international education and foreign language studies programs to the U.S. Department of State. That's where we're at so far. So all of those now are being relocated. And my first, though, looking at this, and Linda McMahon put an op-ed, USA Today, I think the week before, but now we're here. They keep touting that the biggest reason to do this is because of the inefficiencies that were so just insurmountable in a Department of Education. And I'm kind of confused as to how we made that better by distributing some of these services to now be housed in just other big bureaucratic departments of federal bureaucracy. Why does moving a piece of bureaucracy to another piece of bureaucracy make it less bureaucratic? Help me out here, Johnny Jacob.
Well, Tim, first of all, I just want to say you're missing a key component of this. They're not just moving it from one bureaucracy to another bureaucracy. They're moving it from one bureaucracy to another that does not specialize in any of these things, nor do they know anything about it. And that's why, frankly, it's going to work just fantastic.
Johnny.
I'm still stuck, Tim, on remembering WrestleMania 17 when Linda McMahon, you know, came out of that catatonic state to kick her husband in the beanbag and cost him the big win. I believe he was wrestling his son, the good Vince McMahon. I'm stuck on WrestleMania history. But all jokes aside, Tim, this has been, you know, week after week of, like you said, more information. It's like we're in a wait and see, and we're active in that wait and see what happens state. But, you know, this is a full dismantling of the U.S. Department of Education as promised. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we're shocked or surprised, although I'll admit I was like, yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. Like most of the stuff that comes out of this administration's mouth, I'm kind of like, really? Can we really do that? And can we really do that? Doesn't seem to matter much. Unprecedented moves. But Tim, you know, I keep hearing, you know, hold on, this is going to make things more efficient. This is going to cut red tape. This is going to clear up bureaucracy. And man, if there's one thing I can relate to is being frustrated by bureaucracy. So it sounds good to me, but pencil busters, the lesson here, well, while it sounds good, is it actually good? And is this, you know, dismantling of the U.S. Department of Ed going to, you know, streamline things as promised, or is it, as it appears, it's going to do, you know, make things even more confusing? Because I have a degree, you know, in educational policy and in federal programs. It's like, we've studied this, Tim. It's our job to know what's going on. And I'm the first to admit, honestly, I'm pretty perplexed at how this is going to work. I'm even more perplexed at how these moves, right, as we dismantle the U.S. Department of Education, I shouldn't even say we, as a few in our democracy work pretty high up, you know, while democracy is on life support to dismantle, you know, the bedrock of this democracy, its education system. But, you know, moving it around, I in my head, I have the visual image of playing that game where there's a coin or an object. Maybe it's like a peanut or an M&M under three cups and and they shuffle the cups around and you have to kind of keep your eye on where it is. You know, imagine about 40 cups, you know, and five different objects and they're all being shuffled around, but they don't land back in the Department of Ed. So I can't see how this streamlines anything, although it sounds good to me. Hey, let's cut the red tape. Let's, you know, get rid of bureaucracy and let's be more direct about our education. And if we're serious about that, direct about our democracy. Mm. But Tim, this just seems to be really nonsensical moves.
Let me add to that. You know, again, for even more efficiencies.
Yeah.
All of those moves will still be overseen by the about to be dismantled Education Department. So the bureaucracy that got taken apart and moved to other bureaucracies will still be bureaucratically controlled by in the state of current dismantling, the Education Department.
Tim, I got a question for you then, because let's just bring this down to ground level, right? If we're just a couple of guys chopping it up, maybe talking about Thanksgiving, what we ate for Thanksgiving, having a couple of beers outside in the garage, you know, I'm going to ask you, Tim, do you think just if we simplify this, is this just, you know, the U.S. Department of Education or the federal government saying, let's make this so bad that public education just really doesn't make sense? And then the alternative, the opportunity to thrive, that being private education models, you know, for-profit charters and education companies can say, hey, this is a total mess. Send your kid here. We've got to figure it out. It's all close here. We've got a good, you know, operating system. We've got good local governance in terms of, you know, we have CEOs of this company. And does it make sense that maybe this is a move to just say public education, it doesn't work so good. Look, it's totally confusing. It's underfunded. It's all over the place. There's not even a department for it.
It's truly all over the place now.
Yeah, right. So let's just, on the ground level, it seems like, okay, maybe the intention is to make it worse.
So let's
move further away.
Let's take the baseball team of 9 players and put them all somewhere else and then still ask them to play the game of baseball.
Basically, and then say, look at how awful they are at this game. And then say, well, there's this other product over here, this other league or this other, opportunity to play ball. And they've got it figured out. And really, they don't have it figured out. It's just less of a mess than, the public system seems to be going towards. I mean, I hate to speak that way. I'm always the optimist. But when I get down to brass tacks with this, I'm just like, wow. If it's not to make things more efficient, because this certainly can't be, is it to say it's more efficient, but then just move further away from its primary responsibility? And that being, to ensure quality education and access to that quality education for all children in this country. And instead of just coming out and saying that directly, it's like, kind of when like I neglect mowing the lawn in my backyard and then I turn it into, a big wild food forest. That's what I call it. And I'm letting the grass grow and reseed. Really, it's just my yard's a mess. And I may have intentionally done that to get rid of the responsibility of cutting the lawn all the time.
So it's a real major league situation where the owner is going to lose as many games as possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she doesn't want to be in Cleveland anymore. And she's working against the team.
Something like that. Yeah. Setting itself up to fail. And who does it fail? Tim, ultimately it fails children across this country. I hate to sound like such, I mean, put my tinfoil cap on, right? And I have this cooking conspiracy that, these moves are to, hurt public education intentionally. But I don't know, Tim, I might even be able to, the more they keep announcing things, I could take the tinfoil cap off and say, see, look at
it. I think, there's two ways to make sense of what you think you might be potentially seeing. So the move to dismantle the Department of Education is coming from an administration and largely from one political party. So going back to Reagan, Republicans have philosophically not agreed with a strong federal government, right? And that these decisions would be better handled at the local level, and that anytime the federal government gets involved, there's some form of overreach, and then the overreach becomes inefficient. And so philosophically, let's let the people closest to where the decisions are made. And anybody listening to our show is going like, well, that sounds like something you guys have been in favor of a lot of times, that the people most affected by decisions should have a larger, if not almost exclusive, say in how the things go. And so that is what is being sold as why they're doing it, going back to that base Republican philosophy. And I'm not judging that philosophy, I'm just pointing it out as the fact that a strong federal presence actually undermines the independence and the efficiencies and actually better decision-making that should result at the local level. But the question, as we're coming up, is that really, or is it more what Johnny's saying, which is intentional dismantling of public education to make room for something else. What is that something else? Johnny gave us a hint. We'll see if we have enough time when we get back to maybe keep this going, though. We probably won't answer it. We'll be back. Yeah, you know what that. Plus the Pinnacles, holy leaded. Education talk, educated educators, talking education. Saturday after Thanksgiving, that small business Saturday. Again, reminder, you're out there. Support those local small businesses. Hey, you know, you really want to support democracy over this incredibly mass consumer driven. Well, you know what? Put your dollars to use, put them back in your local economies, support those local small businesses, and don't support another WrestleMania, whatever, with Linda McMahon, because after this stint of taking apart the Department of Education, I think she's going to need a long break. So we don't want to.
Who the hell do you think you are?
There we go. Woo. Thanks, Vince. Always need you around like that. Okay, so answer Johnny's premise. Is this all really just a dismantling to actually do away with public education as the foundational education system in this country, and, you know, creating a lot of chaos and pain so that most people would go, oh my God, we need something different. Johnny, the answer, which I said there weren't going to be any, the answer, according to Dr. Tim Slecker, is why, yes, you happen to be correct, my friend. This has always been the intention from this push anywhere, whether it's and I said all the way back to you know, Reagan and A Nation at Risk, to Bush's No Child Left Behind, to Obama's Race to the Top, all of these have set up such a chaotic situation that the sense is, my God, this schooling in America isn't working. And we need something different. We need something new. And largely right now, what we see that new is what we call choice. And actually the funding for education being directed back mostly to parents, and that parents can take that funding. And Johnny, if they want to put it back in a public school, that's their choice. If they want to put it in a charter school, if they want to put it into a private micro school with three of their neighbors, that's their decision. Because Johnny, at the extreme end of that philosophy, we know that parents always are the most informed and best people to make long-term decisions about the education of other people's children.
Kids all across the land, there's no need to argue. Parents just don't understand.
Yeah, I was waiting for that one. You teed that one up nicely, Tim. I agree with you. I'm glad I can take my tinfoil cap off. It's left over from Thanksgiving anyways. But Tim, thank you for, you know, clarifying that, because, you know, I agree with you. Jokes aside today, you know, this effort, you know, to streamline, to make things more efficient is, you know, it's gaslighting us from the real, you know, real action here. And it's taking a massive step back, even away from, you know, supporting children in this country. And so who suffers, you know, is a question I always ask when we're analyzing any policy, you know, before we name it good or bad, is, you know, who's benefiting and who's suffering? And is this, you know, supporting our democracy, or is it undermining it?
That's the key.
And, you know, to intentionally take something that our democracy not only depends on, but is a signifying characteristic of a strong democracy, that being a strong public education system around the world, you know, all throughout history. When you think about democracy, you can't think about it without a strong public education system. And so when any government or any administration in the government, you know, is making decisions and taking action to step away from responsibly providing an education to all children in that country, you know, one, it's anti-democratic, and two, there's got to be a reason. And I think, Tim, that's the reason, right? To make way for growing, you know, limitless, you know, deregulated private education system in this country. And so, Tim, you hit the nail on the head. Sometimes those are charter schools. I'll just put the disclaimer out there too. Not all charter schools operate that way.
No,
but it's, you know, it's a move away from education being a characteristic and responsibility of the government to being, you know, it's part of, if you can afford it and you're so lucky as to be close to a good option or good options, congratulations. If not, like most of working America, they are in the if not category. Good luck out there, because you're on your own. And I'm tired. I know I'm tired of being on my own in a democracy. And if you listener out there are also tired, you know, support your local public schools, support your local businesses, exercise your civic duty, democracy in action. You do you, have a conversation with your neighbor. You and your neighbor go support a local business and talk about schools. On that note, Tim.
Hey, you know, now it's time for your moment of zen. I have no right to despair. I insist on hope.
Hey, thanks for listening to Busted Pencils broadcast today. And remember to grab great podcasts chocked full of more fully leaded education talk on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course on the Civic Media website. Hey, and don't be late for a special homeroom on Monday. And make sure you can catch next week's class and session on Wednesday. And find us on Friday for Producer's Choice. And just like today, every week you can catch Busted Pencils at 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media Network stations for 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.